As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, City Spurs 3-3 and the super blooper from Simon Hooper. We embrace the chaos there and at Anfield, scene of Liverpool 4, Fulham 3. Plus, Gordon's alive, but Man United are as ugly and flat as their manager's hat. Burnley, Sheffield United, the elbows are flying and poor Heckenbottom may get one. And many other stories too in this Totally Football Show. Oh, look, listener, it seems to be Sunday the 3rd of December and we're back in the Totally Football Show studio to bring you a brand new roundup. And what a roundup it's set to be with Daniel Storey joining us from his domicile.
Thank you, James. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to see you, Daniel. Tim Spears is in from The Athletic.
Hi, James.
Daniel Storey from The Eye, of course, and hi to you, Tim. And also Natalie Gedra from The Sky Sports. Natalie.
Hello.
You changed your handle.
Yes, I did.
All right, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Very happy.
What are you doing at Sky Sports?
Matchday reporter.
Cool.
Yes.
Nice.
So I'm across the action.
You certainly were. Where did you go this weekend?
Arsenal Wolves.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You were asking the tough questions to Mikel Arteta after.
Yeah. That was me.
Nice. excellent. Well, we'll maybe get some thoughts on that, but there's a lot to get into today's show. Apologies to you, listener, if your favourite team doesn't get quite the mention that you were hoping for, but there's just been everything happening. We had the joint biggest win ever by a team starting the day bottom of the Premier League table. We had, what else did we have? We had the latest Liverpool winning comeback of all time and other records too. Anyway, let's hear some scores. We've just seen Man City play Spurs and that ended 3-3 and it was bonkers. Talk about that in a second or two. Earlier on Sunday, there were four matches. West Ham Palace was much as you'd expect, 1-1 and a bit drab. Liverpool Fulham was not as you'd expect. Liverpool were 3-2 down after 87 minutes, but managed to come back and win 4-3. Crazy. Villa went behind at Bournemouth, but they pulled that back to 2-2, and Brighton lost 3-2 at Chelsea. It was a rough weekend for teams that have played on Thursday night, basically. Saturday, Arsenal stayed top with a 2-1 win over Wolves. Brentford beat Luton 3-1. Everton won 1-0 at Forest. Burnley thumped Sheffield United at 5-0. And Saturday night, it was 1-0 for Newcastle United against Man United, although Nick Pope becoming the latest big name to join the Magpies injury list. We begin at the Etihad.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Johnson. Kolasinski! Oh! Three each in the 90th minute. Alderias Thackeray. They dared and they did.
Peter Drury there in excellent form, as were many of the footballers on the field at the Etihad Sunday afternoon as Man City faced Spurs in a 3-3 draw in which the previously stuttering Spurs opened the scoring, then went behind to the predictable City response, but then twice themselves came from behind to earn an improbable point. Crikey. Tim Spears, fortune smiled on this Wolves fan the day you were put on the Spurs beat.
Yes, absolutely.
What a team.
What a team. Markedly different to last season's Spurs team that I was initially drafted
That's
into
true.
Cover. It's just, yeah, the difference couldn't be any more stark. And it is interesting to note the way that Spurs have previously taken on Man City with great success, 5 wins in their previous 7. Normally sort of a low block, 30% possession, that kind of thing. Today, completely different. We knew what we were going to get from them. And they made the game what it was, really. You didn't want it to end at all. They weren't quite as cavalier as they have been in recent weeks. They actually registered an XG of 0.49, which is their lowest of the season, believe it or not. But there was still a huge element of bravery in their performance.
What was Man City's XG? I've got it here as 3.09, but opinion differs. I mean, it's over the threes anyway. Mm. Big.
But I think this has to do a lot with that first half, because during the first half, we ended up with this amazing scoreline and this electric finish of a match. But during the first half, Spurs were kind of in a limbo because they were not properly engaged with defending. Oh, we're going to defend Manchester City. And they weren't playing Ange ball. They weren't playing that style of football properly. So second half, when he brings on Højbjerg, I think he wins a little bit of the control in the midfield, because they were losing balls very easily for Manchester City, and they weren't recovering these balls. And that dynamic changed. And on the second half, we had a weird spell, a 20-minute spell, if I'm not mistaken, where City wasn't doing much and Spurs were trying. And I was thinking, remember when we were very excited that City and Spurs were going to play this open match, and all of a sudden it wasn't happening, and all of a sudden it was. Mm. So yeah, a lot of different momentums in the match.
Very much so. Gary Neville citing complacency as the main factor behind that spell that you mentioned. Daniel, what do you take away from this game? It's barely half an hour since the final whistle blew, but what does it leave you with?
Well, I don't think it was complacency. I think it was that City have basically came into this season aiming, with Guardiola aiming to win the title, as we've said a few times, with control, because I think he thought that was the only way they were going to be able to avoid this kind of accumulated fatigue after going so deep into last season and wanting to do the same. And they're just not really able to do it. You know, they've conceded 9 goals in the last 4 games. Every time they try and open up a game, they leave themselves vulnerable at the back. Every time they try and close a game with control, they seem to make a mistake in midfield, whether it's a pass, whether it's giving away a foul, just to give an opponent a chance. It does feel as if pretty much every big chance that City are giving away at the moment is going in. That chance definitely felt like that.
We saw that midweek as well, the game against
Leipzig. Yeah, absolutely. All those counter-attacking goals. But Guardiola won't be happy about it. In terms of Spurs, I mean, I think we're all pretty much convinced that this kind of Ange ball was the right way to go to, you know, sort of spring clean the entire club. But this was the ultimate vindication, because, as Tim says, if they play this as they did before with this manager, it doesn't work. It might have worked under Conte, the sitting deep and playing with 25% and trying to hit on the break with Kane and Son. It might have done, but it wouldn't have worked with this team, I don't think. So, yeah, absolute vindication.
Well, he was asked that on Friday in his pre-match press conference, you know, a couple of times. Are you going to go a bit more defensive? You know, it's Man City away. You've got 9-10 players out. Surely you've got to rein it in a little bit. And he just laughed, really. And he was just like, kind of like, you guys don't get it yet. Like, that's not why I was hired. I was not hired to be a defensive manager to try and sit back, you know. And he said this, and I completely believe him. He said it's not about the performance or the result at Man City on Saturday. It's about the mentality. The players have got to do exactly what I'm asking them to do. I need to know who's going to go with me here. And it's about the bigger picture. It's about more than 3-3 today. It's about building this team for the long term. And you can see it. You can really see the blocks being put in place.
Without kind of going back to kind of digging up old graves, because we're probably going to do it later in the show. But we talked about Manchester United last week and about how, like, they didn't really pass the eye test. And that although they were the form team in the Premier League, it didn't ever really feel like that, because you couldn't really see how it was happening or whether the kind of deliberate pinch points in it happening. You can do that with Spurs. When they win and when they lose, you can at least see the strategy there writ large, which you can't for other clubs. And supporters like that when they've had it dreadful for the last 2 years.
We had moments of sublime Spurs in this. Son's breakaway goal to open the scoring after, I think, only about 9 minutes was won. The Bissouma have a wander and a wobble in the middle of the field and set up Grealish for what looked like City's winner was another.
They had a few moments like that of defensive vulnerability, which you're always going to get, but Postecoglou won't have been happy with some of the defending. He saw Ben Davies getting pulled out of position and Bissouma running into trouble. But yeah, the equaliser was obviously the crucial moment, the one that makes it to 3-3. That was sort of a big moment because Kulusevski doesn't do that. They haven't got many goal scorers in this team. In fact, for all their sort of enterprising, cavalier, attacking play, in the top eight, there's only Man United that have scored fewer than Spurs. You know, they're not free scoring. They haven't got many goal scorers. You take Maddison out of that team, there's only really Son. And Kulusevski, for all his sort of incredible creativity and his great work rate, he doesn't score many goals. So he's very hesitant in front of goal. Just to see him attacking the back post, Brennan Johnson, who I thought had a good game and is showing signs of becoming a really good player, with a perfect cross and a great header from Kulusevski. I mean, he scored every time he's been at the Etihad, but in general, he's a bit like Lo Celso, yeah, he'll only ever score against Man City.
Yeah. So, but what is it about City at the moment? John Stones is out, but there are other players. Why is it that every opportunity that Spurs had, they seem to score with it? And as you were saying, Daniel, that's pretty much a constant with City's opponents at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know is the honest answer. I wonder if the arrival and the kind of acceleration beyond expectation of Jeremy Doku, who is a player who likes to create those kind of chaotic moments, likes to take on players. Maybe they're attacking in a slightly different way. Maybe that's forcing the central midfielders a little bit higher up the pitch than they'd like, and therefore there's more of an opportunity, a slightly higher line for teams to attack at them. Maybe it's the difficulty in getting Josep Guardiola into that team to kind of work out that formation with different parts. You know, as you say, Stones isn't been there. Rodri's been suspended or injured for a couple of games. There are moving parts. We should also say that Rodri's now suspended for Villa this midweek, which is a huge game given Villa's home form.
Well,
they will, you know, if we expected this one to be chaotic, and as Natalie said, it's sometimes slightly short, I think Wednesday really will be chaotic against Villa.
Rodri will be missing, as will Jack Grealish, as City returned to the club from whence he came. Before we come on to what awaits on Wednesday, though, we should talk about the Hooper blooper, the refereeing call at the end there. Natalie?
I know as much as Erling Haaland.
Okay.
who seems very upset with the whole situation, as his Twitter account says. So I couldn't understand why. Yeah. What happened there? I mean, why did he blow the whistle? Because he makes the gesture of giving advantage to the player.
So there's a foul. City are breaking forward. It's 3-3. City are breaking downfield, and there's a foul on Haaland, and the referee gives the... Well, he indicates that he's seen a foul, but at the same time, he puts his arm out as if to indicate it's advantage because City still have possession.
Yes, and Haaland barely fell.
Right.
Yeah, he just kept playing.
He stays on his feet and passes to Grealish, finds Grealish, who's all
and
alone.
He was going to be one-on-one against with the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And my first thought was like, did I miss the flag? but no, there was no flag.
Can you think of any explanation for Simon Hooper's decision to give the advantage for essentially a second and then blow up anyway?
Yeah, it did seem very odd. I don't know if he thought that other players had stopped playing or something. But yeah, it felt very, very strange.
But even if they had stopped playing, that's their fault. They should
play to the whistle, etc. and so on. Yeah. Yeah, it was a very odd one. I mean, it wasn't the weirdest moment of Haaland's match, I think, given some of his finishing for a freakishly good striker is very, very odd. That first half chance that he put wide, I had no thought concept that was going to go that side of the post at all. I think he took his eye off it slightly as if he was just going to guide it in and was sure. But yeah, he's in a weird situation at the moment, Haaland. That's the other thing we should say about City. They are conceding every goal. It feels like they're conceding every good chance they concede. They're really not finishing as they normally do. Mm. You know, slightly unlucky with Doku's shot, slightly unlucky with Alvarez's, not unlucky with Haaland's just poor execution. And the game should have been out of sight at half-time. It should have been 3 or 4-1 at half-time.
I can only think that Simon Hooper just didn't have a good view of it. And maybe because there were a lot of Spurs players sort of chasing back, maybe he thought one of them was getting the ball first. I don't know. I'm trying to think of excuses for the guy. But anyway, Pep Guardiola's chosen not to go mad. He says he doesn't want to criticise the referee, and we didn't draw because of that.
Okay, well, that's good. Because I think when we saw Grealish racing through with the ball at his feet, we thought that was 4-3 right there. It wasn't, though, and City dropped to third in the table ahead of the midweek round of matches. Quite aside from their record against Spurs, which has seen them win only two of their last eight meetings, they now won only three of their last eight against anyone in the Premier League. And Villa so strong at home. No Rodri, whose absence was so critical for them earlier on in the season. No Grealish against his old side. And possibly Doku not available either?
Yeah, question mark, because he got subbed with an injury, but we don't know the extent. So, yeah, let's see.
What do you think, Natalie? Not about Doku's injury, but what about City's prospects? How long is this wobble going to go on? How serious is this going to be?
I find it interesting how this season we're having this conversation about Manchester City embracing the chaos. Mm. And it looks like they're adapting to the chaos. And I'm sure Pep is not happy with 9 goals conceded in the last 4 games type of chaos, especially because one of City's main features in the winning seasons was being so solid defensively. But yeah, it looks like they're going through a bit of adapting in many ways that Daniel mentioned before. But I find it interesting. I find it an interesting process, not only with Doku, because he brings very, very specific features for the attacking side of Manchester City. But yeah, the way they are regrouping and reorganizing in many ways, in the way they attack, in the way they mark. So yeah, it's interesting. You look at the table and you see it's interesting.
Yeah, it certainly does. Villa on Sunday earlier on narrowly avoided defeat at Bournemouth. Some header from Ollie Watkins right at the death to, well, it might not have been right at the death. I don't know because it wasn't on telly. Did anybody get much of an idea of this from cobbled together highlights and that kind of thing?
Yeah, Villa were awful. They have got a problem away from home this season. They've kept 2 clean sheets away from home this season. One of them was at Stamford Bridge and one of them was against Hibs in the Conference League. They've conceded now kind of 2 at Forest, 2 at Bournemouth, 3 at Legia Warsaw, 5 at Newcastle, 3 at Liverpool. It is as if that high line is causing them a problem, but at home they're so confident and they're able to score early often that it doesn't end up being a problem. Whereas if they don't score early away from home, the opposition seems to get, you know, seems to be given faith from that and is able to push back Villa. They made so many mistakes. Matty Cash didn't play and Ezri Konsa isn't really a right back. Watkins wasn't really in the game. Moussa Diaby's gone right off the boil. They are still brilliant at home, but there are slight teething problems, I think, in adapting to that system away from home.
Okay, but you still fancy them Wednesday night?
Against Rodri-less Man City is, yeah, I mean, City haven't won without Rodri in a while. So, yeah, I think it'll be a brilliant game. Really, really good. Like, high intensity, high lines. City will go at it. I remember going to this game a couple of years ago and Bernardo Silva scored the goal of the season, that volley from across, which is absolutely superb. Both feet off the ground. So, yeah, it'll be a really, really good game.
Excellent. All right. Loads of other matches coming up midweek, of course. Tim, you're going to go to Spurs against West Ham. That's on Thursday.
And Romero is going to go for this one as well.
Oh, Romero's back.
Yes, he's
right.
Back from suspension.
Nice.
Good news.
Nice. Villa, by the way, after they host City midweek, they've got Arsenal at the weekend, also at Villa Park. So plenty of excitement for Birmingham-based fans. Next up, let's get a quick look at Sunday's other games early on, including the extraordinary 4-3 between Liverpool and Fulham.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Before you get back to this Athletic podcast, did you know it's just one of many made by The Athletic every week? I'm Abby Patterson, senior producer here at The Athletic, and I get to work across so many of our shows. But even I have my favourites. Sometimes you're just too busy for a full-length podcast. I get it. We've all been there. Well, we've got a show to help you. Get up to speed with all the football stories you need to know about with our daily football briefing.
It's done and dusted. Saudi Arabia will host the 2034 World Cup.
Got a bug for the women's game? Then Full-Time Europe is for you. It's our dedicated women's football podcast answering the questions you're asking from the WSL and Champions League.
So what's going wrong at Arsenal?
But perhaps you want to know exactly how a team has set itself up. Then come to the audio whiteboard and join Michael Cox and our analytics gurus as they dissect and examine the game like nobody else can. That's on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
I don't think I've ever seen a striker who reads the game so well.
Just search The Athletic wherever you're listening to this podcast now, and you'll find your next podcast obsession in no time at all. Now, let's get back to your show.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Nunez cross, nearly finds Tsimikas, brought down by Alexander Arnold!
Liverpool taking on Fulham Sunday afternoon at Anfield, where they have an absolutely brilliant record. Fulham surprising everybody by going 3-2 up and hanging on to the lead until the 87th minute, when all of a sudden Liverpool struck back and ended up winning 4-3. What a heartbreaker for the Cottagers. The Athletic's Pete Rutsler joins us now from Anfield. Peter, what an extraordinary match you've just witnessed.
Yeah, a real classic with some pretty impressive goals as well. Incredibly brutal from a Fulham perspective. I've still got my Fulham hat on for this game. But yeah, I mean, that the last 10 minutes was really quite something, and incredible atmosphere inside Anfield. I've been pretty quiet actually for the most part, but it became an absolute bear pit towards the end, and pure devastation for the Fulham players as well.
Indeed. Unbeaten at home for over a year in the Premier League, 3-2 down with 87 minutes played, and then with those two late goals winning 4-3. Fulham had battled so hard through this. You mentioned the goals. Trent Alexander-Arnold with the first, then Harry Wilson strikes back, then an absolute worldie from Alexis McAllister, and then Fulham bounce back with two goals and take the lead until, as I say, that final spell. Was Kelleher a factor in this, or was it just the Cottagers, or what would you put it down to?
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing with Liverpool, the fact that Kelleher's come in to the Liverpool defence, and how that affects the mentality, the confidence, those relationships, and the way Fulham were able to sort of maybe exploit that a little bit. I think the other side to it was the fact that the way Fulham came back in this game, twice, you know, falling behind, twice coming back, it followed spells where Liverpool seemed totally in control. The first goal, a fantastic free kick from Trent Alexander-Arnold. Liverpool then took control of the game and then just seemed to drop off, a loose pass from Matip. And suddenly Fulham can counter and were pretty ruthless in a way that they haven't been this season in this post-Alexander Mitrovic era. And then just before half-time, after McAllister's fantastic goal, you know, once the board went up, it was almost as though Liverpool could, you know, we'll just see this out, and the tempo dropped and Fulham punished them for that. So I think there's an element of it being Kelleher, but also some wider issues, I think, just allowing Fulham back into the game.
From a defensive perspective, Pete, on Fulham's side, do you think there's much that could have been done differently considering the quality of Liverpool's goals? Because Robinson, for example, he seemed to have a really good match in this duel against Salah. But even so, Liverpool found a way to score four amazing goals.
Yeah, I mean, Marco Silva after the game, and then speaking to a couple of the Fulham players as well, Tim Ream and Alex Iwobi, it was sort of, yeah, they've scored some incredible goals here. There's not too much we can can do about it. I think there's an element of, you know, there's the odd loose pass. I mean, you could say that Raul Jimenez's header for the Alexis McAllister's goal is, you know, it's not the best clearance, but then McAllister scores an unbelievable finish. So I think that was the feeling. I think defensively, you know, Fulham have made a lot of mistakes this season, and it didn't feel like that was the issue today. And I think that's a real confidence booster for the team, and also the fact that they've scored three goals as well. And as you say, I think Anthony Robinson had a phenomenal game. I don't know, maybe it's the fact that he, you know, came through the ranks at Everton and coming to Anfield gives him that extra lift. I'm not sure, because he also had a brilliant game against Mo Salah on the first game of last season as well. He's actually had a run of a couple of quite difficult matches, had a really tough afternoon at Villa, but was absolutely fantastic. But I think, you know, there were a lot of very impressive individual performances from Fulham today, but when you come up against a team like Liverpool, they have the quality to win a game with their own individuals in the side.
Pete Rutsler, many thanks to him for that. Ooh, some lovely goals in that game. Which was your favourite? McAllister?
McAllister, yes, definitely. Yeah. It was his first goal for Liverpool.
Was it?
Yes.
Right. And Trent looked pretty good as well, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, that first free kick got... Trent free kick has been put down as an own goal, if I'm not mistaken.
It has, yeah.
Came back and came off Leno, which is, yeah, annoying. It was a beautiful, beautiful free kick. But yeah, McAllister's is sensational. So when you realise just how... When you sit low down in a stand and you realise, even though that's just a speculative effort, just how hard they're hitting that shot, it's like nothing else. And he looked... I always like it when players look quite surprised that they've scored, and he looked really, really surprised.
Did that take the gloss off the Garnacho goal for you last week?
No, nothing can do that.
Okay.
Nothing can do that.
Good. Good. The other games on Sunday, West Ham was 1-1 with Palace, and West Ham aren't a lot of fun right now. I think that's fair to say.
Not really. No.
Okay. Brighton lost 3-2 at Chelsea. You actually saw this game, Natalie. Anything we should know?
Yes. So after Chelsea's defeat for Newcastle last weekend, they really needed a response in terms of attitude. And Pochettino was very annoyed with it, with the lack of personality from the team. So they needed this response. And given the circumstances with Gallagher's red card, they gave it. They gave the response. Gallagher got a red card at the end of first half. So Chelsea managed to hold on to that 2-1 for a while. Then they scored the third goal on a penalty, and Brighton scored their second one with João Pedro. And Chelsea had quite a few problems in terms of suspensions and injuries. Rhys James was suspended, so Disasi played open in the right-hand side because Cucurella was also suspended. Gusto is injured, so a lot of problems in that sector. And Cole Palmer started on the bench.
Really?
Yes, but he entered on second half and he did really well. First two goals from Chelsea from set plays. Mm-hmm. They started with set plays and to be fair, Brighton didn't defend really well, especially those two first goals. But you have to give it to Chelsea for the response, but also with Gallagher's red card. You can discuss the red card, okay, Gallagher's red card. But if you're talking about a team that makes mistakes because it's a team that is under construction, that things are still developing, it's fine. But if you have players like Rhys James and Conor Gallagher who have so much Premier League experience, they can get red cards like Rhys James got against Newcastle and now Conor Gallagher against Brighton. They were fine in the end, but that's definitely something to pay attention to.
Well, Chelsea have a big midweek game coming up themselves when they're taking on Manchester United. Should we talk about what they got up to Saturday night away at Newcastle United, or perhaps what they didn't get up to. Newcastle, anyway, were the 1-0 winners of this, with Anthony Gordon the scorer. He scored or assisted 7 goals, Gordon, in his last 8 Premier League matches. And it was, I think it's fair to say, an utterly one-sided game until a curious spell at the end when Man United suddenly turned up. I'm not sure what made that. Was it just Newcastle had run out of gas there?
I guess, I mean, Newcastle had produced this monumental effort in midweek, and you're thinking they're going to go into this, you know, obviously, well, they've been emotionally and physically shattered. So impressive the way that they roused themselves, because it wasn't just a backs to the wall, beat Man United 1-0. They were utterly relentless, like you say, for about 80 minutes, wave after wave of attack. And Harry Maguire has gone from being stripped to the captaincy and fourth choice centre back to basically holding together Manchester United yesterday. I thought he was magnificent for the most part. I know he's ended up having his Laurel and Hardy moment by another fine mess denying the equaliser when the ball sort of hits him, so unfortunately. But I thought, yeah, before that he stopped at least sort of two or three goals with some crucial blocks and interceptions as Newcastle was sort of waving into the Man United box. And yeah, you mentioned Gordon. It's a phenomenal run. I tell you what, there's a Raheem Sterling shaped hole in that England team which hasn't been filled yet. And I wouldn't put it past him at all to grab a place in the squad, and maybe even more than that. He's everything that Southgate would want from that kind of player at the moment. But no one else has grabbed down that left forward spot, be it Phil Foden or Rashford, certainly not, and Grealish, certainly not. And Gordon was player of the season at the Euros last summer for the under-21s, and he'll be on Southgate's radar. And yeah, I definitely fancy him to get in the squad. Yeah.
And with the injury list that Newcastle has, he had to play in different positions in the meantime. Now he's back to his best position, but that shows a lot of character from him as well. And regarding that injury list, I remembered actually last week when I spoke to Joelinton after the Chelsea match, Joelinton saying that Eddie Howe just highlighted for them to focus on what they have and not in what they don't have. And I think Newcastle's been doing this so well because it's ridiculous how many problems they're having with injuries and players suspended, but especially with injuries and now with Nick Pope,
right,
who has dislocated his shoulder. We still don't know the extent of the injury. In this regard, you have Dubravka as the number two goalkeeper, which at least he's no Nick Pope, but at least he's a very experienced goalkeeper. So when it comes to second options for goalkeepers, second goalkeepers, I think it's not so bad, but it's not great. But it's a lot of resilience from Newcastle.
Newcastle, an extraordinary run of form, particularly at home. 6 home victories in a row now. And I think they, with perhaps the exception of the Arsenal game, have been passing the eye test. As for Man United, they can't be arsed, I think, seem to be the reaction of most observers.
I mean, yeah, I hope that's just how it looks. And what's actually happened is there's a group of demotivated players because they're not really getting on with the manager in terms of man management or tactics or absolutely everything else. But they're defending, like, or their protection of Onana, who has himself in the Champions League been woeful, but their protection of him in the Premier League is like, it's sort of verging on gross negligence. They've allowed shots at a quicker rate this season than all three clubs who got relegated did last season.
Wow.
So more shots per game faced than Leeds, than Leicester and Southampton. And, you know, we're in beginning of December. This is not 4 games into the season. We're getting on for 40% of the way through the season. And, yeah, you just look at the centre mid and it's a poor academy kid who, you know, he shouldn't be having to deal with all that. And it's another academy graduate who's just not really very good enough to do it. You've got Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial, who, yeah, like, as you refer to, James, just looked unbothered by the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then, as Tim says, you've got Harry Maguire. And now it's brilliant that he's playing really well, but he was frozen out 3 months ago. So it doesn't exactly suggest that everybody is rushing to fill that gap. Rafa Varane is still on the bench and not playing. And nobody really knows why that is or what the good reason is for that. It's an absolute mess. And, you know, we say, to kind of bring back where we started the show, there was a reason why we weren't all rushing to praise Man United last week, and that's because this felt like it was slightly built on spit and sawdust, and that's exactly how it looks now.
13 games away from home against teams in the top 9. They've had 12 defeats, 1 draw and 0 wins. All 5 games this season that they played against teams in the top half, they've lost.
Well, that's it, and that speaks to this soft centre. They've lost every big game. The Champions League campaign's been absolute shambles. They've got such a soft centre. There was just so many things going wrong. It looked horrible yesterday.
At least we know now that the coach is the problem. I'm talking about the one they took to get to St James's.
Yeah.
Their flight was cancelled from Manchester, you see, because of the weather. Because if you're not in the UK, it's been pretty parky this weekend. And they had to take an almost 3-hour coach trip. So
The most remarkable stat, sorry, Daniel, from yesterday was McTominay played 100, I think the game lasted probably 100 minutes, and Scott McTominay played all of those minutes, and he touched the ball 31 times. Right in that engine room of the midfield. It's just it's remarkable.
Brilliant stuff from Newcastle, though, and we've kind of saluted their energy. Should they be slightly worried about their inability to close out games? Because at the end, they could have ended up drawing this game somehow.
Yes, but no, I don't think so necessarily. Because they've been running out of options and they did look tired. So I think they actually, considering the circumstances, in many occasions they are overachieving given the amount of problems that they've been facing. They have a lot of talent, of course, in the squad, but they are finding, not only they are finding solutions, but they're finding solutions in a way that's very convincing. Like, they show a lot of energy on the pitch, even though they're playing a lot of matches, a lot of minutes. They're dealing with European football for the first time in a very long time. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a problem. But, of course, it would be better if they didn't have to deal with that.
For sure. A big run of games coming up for the Magpies. Thursday, they're away at Everton. Then Sunday, they're away at Spurs. And they follow that up with the home game against Milan, which is key to their Champions League continuation. And as you say, Natalie, we'll probably be faced without Nick Pope. Yeah.
Got a game against Sunderland on the horizon as well.
Ah, yeah. Thank you so much. Now, also this weekend, there was the draw for the FA Cup third round, which will happen in January, where the competition for many people will get serious. And there were two, I guess, fixtures that leap out at you. One is Arsenal-Liverpool. And the other, as you say, is the first Tyne Wear derby since 2016. Have I called that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Newcastle have had some great cup draws this season when you think of the Champions League group.
Yeah.
Must have the warmest
ball. Man United in the League Cup.
You know, this is one of the matches that I never covered here in England.
Really?
And I really wanted to. Yes.
There you go.
Newcastle, Sutherland. Yeah. Mm. That's a cool one.
Does Sky have the rights to the FA Cup?
Ooh.
No. Don't let her go. She's not allowed.
All right. The other draw that took place this weekend was the Euro 2024 draw. We will maybe have a word about that and Burnley-Sheffield United, yes, after this.
Hi, I'm Ian Irving, host of Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. Twice a week, I'm joined by Andy Mitten, Carl Anker and Laurie Whitwell as we bring you the very best insight from inside Old Trafford. You'll get all you need to know on transfers, tactical analysis, dare I say takeovers, and much, much more as we follow United home and away. You're not getting this anywhere else. So search for Talk of the Devils and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Euro 2024 draw was held on Saturday. Who have England got and who's in the group of death? Here's your answers. Group C has England against Serbia, Slovenia and Denmark. Of course, Gareth Southgate's side beat in the semi-finals of the last Euros. Group B is probably the group of death, would you say, Natalie?
Poor Albania. Well, you know who's coaching Albania?
Silvinho,
yeah. So he was very happy to get them.
She's always got an in, hasn't she, Natalie? She's always got an in, a Brazilian in.
Yes, in the Euros. Yes, definitely. So yeah, Spain, Albania, Croatia and Italy.
Yeah. All right. It all kicks off I think, June the 14th, and that'll be Germany against Scotland. The other two teams in their group are Hungary and Switzerland. Wales, by the way, if Wales make it through the playoffs, they'll be in a group with France, Netherlands and Austria, which doesn't sound much fun either, because Austria, I mean, the other two are bona fide blue chip international teams, and Austria, are, under Ralf Rangnick, are absolutely flying.
That is the group of death.
Is it, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Austria are, they're going to become the kind of Turkey of Euro 2024, where we all say how brilliant they are, like we did it for Turkey in Euro 2020, and then because of the group they're in, they massively deflate in the tournament. But yeah, that is certainly the group of death, particularly if Wales or Ukraine get there.
Right. Let's see, eh? Tuesday, we'll have the Totally Football Show's European edition, and maybe there'll be some thoughts from the fellows about the draw, along with reactions to all the other extraordinary events that took place this weekend across the continent. Also on Tuesday, there's Full-Time Europe, the Athletics Women's Football Podcast. Rafa on Tuesday will no doubt also be celebrating the German victors of the Under-17 World Cup, the final of which took place Saturday in Indonesia, and Germany beat France on penalties after a 2-2 draw. There you go. Very nice. Jack was saying the other day, actually, Natalie, that Brazil won the Under-17s, when was that? 2019? And none of those players have really made much of an impact in the 4 years since. Is that fair?
Yeah, that is fair.
Okay.
Yes, and it's one of the many problems the Brazilian national team is facing right now. Many people think that there should be a more intense process of giving more space to new players, right, and younger, very, very younger players. That, like, the renovation is not...
Okay. Is there nobody coming through at Santos, for example? There's usually like somebody
There's
at
always
Santos.
A player coming through Santos.
Mario. Yes. Mario is the next big thing in Brazilian football. Yeah. Mario, Forest centre-back, he's a new king, surely.
Well, I'm not gonna argue against that. I really like Murilo. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Magnificent. Forest this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I cursed it.
Losing 1-0 to Everton. As Everton claw back a few points after the hammer blow from the disciplinary committee. Anything you want to say about that, Daniel?
Well, it might not be Steve Cooper's last game because there's a midweek programme. Sadly, I think we're coming close to that.
Why are you so convinced that they're going to bin him?
Because the owner has ambitions. I don't know if he said it publicly or privately, but basically wants to finish top half this season.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be difficult. I feel for Steve Cooper. You know, Forest signed 14 players in the summer and 11 of them came after the beginning of August. That's hard to deal with. I think he's played six different central defensive combinations and seven different central midfield combinations. It's hard to work out, but he's also made mistakes and Forest have won 1 in 11 now, I think. I just think sadly it's going one way. He will always be kind of adored at the City Ground for what he's done. But I'm almost to that stage now where I think it's probably a kind of natural end and he's better off out of it. All the kind of noise is that Julian Lopetegui is kind of lined
you mentioned.
Up for it. Although there are another couple of names, I think, being mentioned. But
okay. Well, they have Fulham midweek to Nottingham Forest, so there's that. This game they lost courtesy of a lovely strike from Dwight McNeil and his left foot. Do you appreciate that one, Tim?
Yeah, it was a good goal. He should score more goals, I think, with the ability that he has. But yeah, Everton... just continue to impress. Their away record's fantastic. It's normally Goodison which keeps them up, but this season it might be their away record.
Three away wins in a row for Everton, and Calvert-Lewin was out with a calf complaint. So, but the other attacking players stepped up and, you know, created chances and in the end managed to get the win away.
And Beto's indifferent record in front of goal was actually beneficial because he completely missed the cross that led to the goal. Just couldn't get any part of his body on it. But then, McNeil scored after. So,
Everton currently sitting 18th in the table. They are 2 points behind Luton, who lost against Brentford. The Bees beating them 3-1. That was one of the Saturday 3 o'clock games. Also down there, of course, are Burnley and Sheffield United, who swapped positions this weekend, courtesy of Burnley's 5-0 victory at Turf Moor. Your favourite place to go and watch football, is that right, Daniel?
Well, the back of the James Hargreaves stand, yeah. the view mm-hmm. over the Bob Lord stand, which is single tier, over the hills and the town and the factory chimney and the church steeple and the sloping roofs
the when it was
and the, really frosty. And if you look to your right, you can watch the cricket as well.
Yeah, really? The cricket is there. You can actually, although not
exactly. Have you enjoyed this?
Yes, yes, very much. And I got a clear day there. Uh-huh. It was a sunny day, so the view was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also on field, because Daniel, you went there Saturday afternoon to watch Burnley Sheffield United. What made you make that trip?
Well, I kind of pitched it as a sort of read about the misery derby and kind of the slight futility of Premier League life so soon after promotion, which is, I think still
story.
Does. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Classic misanthropic whining. It still does apply for Burnley, I think, because the only two teams they've beaten this season are in the league are Luton and Sheffield United. And that all that says is that they're the best in the Championship. And we already knew that. But it was probably the worst away performance I can remember in the Premier League that I've seen live from Sheffield United. I mean, Burnley have lost every single home game in the league this season. So you think, well, keep it tight. Let's get the fans kind of frustrated. And yeah, they conceded.
And for the first 14 seconds, they did.
Yeah, they did that. Well, they didn't actually, because they lost two 50-50 challenges and let a man cross the ball free in the first 12 seconds. And then, yeah, conceded after 15 seconds. They then conceded again, a really soft goal where Jacob Bruun-Larsen just ran in behind. And then they needed some fight. So Ollie McBurney thought, well, I know how to do that. I'll elbow two different players in the space of 9 minutes and sort of act offended that I've been booked for both when either could have been a red card. And then to make kind of matters worse, yeah, they just collapsed in the second half. I always think, yeah, it's really sad when you see players going to clap an away end and the away end just doesn't, they have to do it, but the away end does just not want to see them at that point. And they were just sort of swearing at the players, get out of our sights, we want to go home. And they were the ones that stayed to the end, and there weren't many of them. So yeah, I'm not convinced that Burnley are any better than they were than before I went, but they are certainly better than Sheffield United.
Mm. Rodriguez's goal, the fastest of the season in the Premier League. And as he himself was surprised to learn in the post-game interview, that makes him the first player ever to do that twice at two different clubs. He scored in the first 15 seconds for Southampton away to Chelsea 10 years ago. Remarkable. Other stats from this weekend. This by Burnley was the joint biggest win ever by a team starting the day bottom of the Premier League table. And courtesy of the Conor Gallagher red and the Ollie McBurney red yesterday, we've now had more red cards in this season than we had in the entirety of the last campaign, which it's not necessarily about wild ill discipline. It's also about those measures that were brought in at the start of the season where people were getting sanctioned for pointing at the refs funny and kicking the balls nonchalantly away and stuff.
Dissent, yeah.
Dissent, that's the word for it. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. All right, so Vincent Kompany afterwards saying, we always believed this day was coming. Hopefully for us it's a starting point. No, says Daniel, sorry, no it's not. It was Sheffield United.
It sounds a lot like I'm...
No, I mean, that's fair.
Pouring cold water on any degree of hope. But being better than Sheffield United this season will, I think, only be good enough to guarantee you 19th position.
A lot's been made of the fact that no Premier League manager has been sacked yet, but Heckenbottom can't be far away, surely. Because, you know, obviously Daniel's there and I've only seen the highlights so much today, but the minimum you expect is a bit of professional pride and running and kicking, you know, the very basics of football, which you just didn't seem to get from Sheffield United yesterday. Must be a miserable existence for their fans at the moment. It seems the only good reason for them being promoted was to balance the books, and now they're going to get relegated again and try and come back for more next season. I do like the idea of, in fact, if you sniff hard enough, you can smell Neil Warnock just looming in the background. Surely, to end his career.
Legacy appointment.
Well, he's never kept a team in the Premier League, and I love the idea of
He never kept a team in the Premier League?
I believe that's right, Daniel. Probably knows.
Sounds about right, yeah.
What a way to go that would be. I don't know what he smells of, but I've never met the guy. But
good things. You know, he's a lovely man.
Yorkshire pudding, maybe.
That leaves Sheffield United, of course, bottom of the table, as we say. Up at the other end are the team that we haven't really mentioned yet. Their name is Arsenal, and they beat Wolves 2-1. Sorry, the Arsenal.
Yes.
And they beat Wolves 2-1. And Natalie Jeddah was there. Natalie, take us home with Arsenal Wolves.
Very interesting start. Very intense start from Arsenal. And then just kind of dull, for a long period of the second half, but Arsenal controlling the match really well. And all of a sudden, we had an individual mistake by Zinchenko, and Wolves scored. And it seemed like they could get a point there. But what really impressed, and in the end, Arsenal was fine. But what really impressed me about Arsenal this time was the movements and the combinations that they're doing. Because, again, an opponent doubled up on Saka and on Martinelli. So this has been happening throughout the season. And Arsenal, sometimes they struggle to find solutions, especially on that Newcastle match. That was a big talking point. But this time we saw Saka switching with Gabriel Jesus all the time. And on the other side, you saw Trossard switching sites and switching places with Gabriel Martinelli. So it was all very dynamic. And I think the second goal, Odegaard's goal, it's a good show of that speed and movement that ends with a really nice finish. So we were talking about Arsenal sometimes struggling and not playing really well, but they are trying to find new solutions, and they showed really, really good signs in this sense against Wolves. Havertz started on the bench. So it's different characteristics. When you have Havertz playing on the left side and when you have Trossard, it's just different. So
what's the difference?
With Havertz, you don't have the same type of movement, because with Trossard, I think you have... Both players are very versatile. Trossard is an excellent finisher, maybe the best finisher at Arsenal. And with Havertz, you can play him closer to Odegaard and making different types of movements and making different opening different types of space to the top three. And with Trossard, he just floats more, he occupies more space. So it's all very interesting. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Arsenal fans would have been delighted to see Odegaard scoring again after his recent drought. Wolves supporters, like our very own Tim Spears, less impressed by such things as Jose Sarr going off after 23 minutes and that.
I think he's going to be okay.
Is he going to be okay?
Gary Neal said he'd be fine.
And you've got Burnley at Molineux on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's it. Burnley at home and Forest at home next few days. So
all right.
Just got this one out of the way at the weekend, and that's big games in the week.
Very nice. The midweek action starts on Tuesday and rolls right through to, Thursday, and then, there'll be the weekend, etc., and so on.
December.
December.
Every year we talk about December. December.
Are you used to it yet, Natalie?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
I really enjoy December. I look forward to December.
Yeah.
It's just a different
football
vibe.
Or the weather or what?
No, definitely the football. And the Christmas vibes and foods and everything.
Yeah. Okay. Because Christmas is summer back, in back home.
Yes, it doesn't make sense. It just it's weird in Brazil. Mm. Yes, Christmas in the summer, it's just not right. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Natalie.
Thank you.
And to Tim Spears as well, and to Daniel, and to producer Charlie, a new listener. Tuesday, the Euro guys are here to discuss loads of things. And Thursday, we'll be reacting to all of the midweek round that's been played till that point. So, hey, join us for some of that or all of it. But for now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.